For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Our toll-free number to call in is 844-320-4299. If you cannot listen to this entire show today, such as getting home before the show is over and not having AM in your home or what have you because of many distractions, then you can always tune in to this show on Saturdays at 1 p.m. It's rebroadcasted. And it's available over the internet, or you can anywhere you're driving. If you're within the KSBN AM 1230 signal, then you can pick it up. But anyway, because I do realize that there are people in different parts of the country that listen to this, and thank you very much for doing that. And I hope that you are learning something, because again, that key premise: knowledge is power. And if I can empower you to holding your local leaders accountable, then I am doing a service indeed. Many parts of these shows will refer to previous shows, and they're all dovetailed. So the only way you're really going to garner all of the things that you need to know to really gain that knowledge, again, to be powerful, is by downloading, listening to the podcast, listening to these shows, so that you can correlate all this information and become a powerhouse, or what I would consider a constitutional warrior. Don't forget that podcasts are available at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. So please stay informed. On local announcements, this is the last time I can announce this until next year. The Spokane County GOP is hosting their Lincoln Day dinner this Saturday, June 3rd. And so if you don't have your tickets, then you need to get them. There's just a few left. And the prices actually went up this Monday. So make sure that if you want to attend, you get your tickets. I mean, if you haven't got it by now, you should probably work on your procrastination. This is a critical election year, and this is a key fundraiser for the GOP. And I believe most of these county organizations for the GOP use this money for insisting those GOP candidates that best represent them and their needs. And so please make sure you support this. I actually have spoken to the Spokane County Chair, and actually hope to have her or a representative for the Spokane County GOP in to talk about some of the things that they're doing, how well they're able to get funds generated, and maybe how you or we can help them in getting more funds and doing better things. That way we can probably make this county and those public servants that are within this county representative of the majority of the people that really live here, instead of those who are funneling lots of money in that do not live here and are basically buying these seats and so forth. So anyway, another announcement: the Republican Coffee Club, I started announcing this last week, they have a weekly meeting, and this week it's Aaron Tilbury, and he's from the Jonah Project, aiding victims of sex trafficking in Spokane, and he'll be speaking this Friday at 7 o'clock, and next Friday it'll be Doug Chase from the Spokane County Parks and Recreation. The admission is $5 for the venue and coffee, and $1 will get you a donut. And the venue is at the Bangkok Thai restaurant inside the No Lai Brew House at 1003 East Trent, and it's right there on Trent and Hamilton. And again, it's every Friday at 7 a.m. Saturday, June 24th, please make sure you attend this. And as a matter of fact, the Northwest Grassroots sent out an email yesterday requesting for some support. They kind of listed some of the things that they need. Of course, for the most part, they need money. I need to give them a call, and I don't understand, you know, I understand you want to have a rally and you want as many people to come as possible, but maybe you don't charge admission, but maybe you ask that everybody that comes donate $1, I mean, or $2 out of their pocket so that they can help reimburse the expenses for that event and help, you know, sponsor and fund more events down the road. So hopefully they will move in that direction. That way they're not constrained by the lack of funds, because if they get, I want to say they had 500, maybe 800 people that showed up, they're expecting 1,000. So if they get $2 from everybody, every head that walks in the door, that's $2,000 reimbursement, or at least a leap forward in doing their next event and so forth. So anyway, if you're going to go, you know, maybe take a little extra money and help them out, because it does cost money to be able to put on these events for the equipment and the labor and so forth. So please, if you can't contribute time and other resources, a great resource that you can contribute would be a little bit of money. This Saturday and Sunday at the Kootenai Fairgrounds in Coeur d'Alene is the North Idaho Mineral Club, and this is their annual gem, jewelry, and mineral show. So if you want to see some interesting fossils and interesting gems and or rocks, it's a rock show, and Paul McCartney won't be there. So I have a standing question. I asked this, I think, 2 weeks ago, and this is just something that I'm trying to stimulate and get people to ruminate and cogitate and think deeply about. What is religious freedom here in America? Is religious freedom, carte blanche, a constitutional right? Does the Constitution guarantee all religious freedom? So I'm looking for your perspective and insights and how you interpret this right. So all you've got to do is just call in 844-320-4299. I will be very hospitable, and I won't tell you to thank me for your call. Believe it or not, this is the very last week of the month, and this month happens to be the National Electrical Safety Month. If you have less than desirable power backup solution, or if you have no solution at all for when you lose power, and you're looking for a solution, then I would suggest you contact ACI Northwest at 1-800-767-3027, or you can find them at ACI Northwest or ACINW.com. Now, a quick look at the constitutional matters for the week. In Milwaukee, a federal appeals court ruled Tuesday in favor of a transgender student. This is the federal court ruled in favor of a transgender student who challenged a Wisconsin school district policy limiting, I'm using the word his when it's her, bathroom usage. In September, U.S. District Judge Pamela Pepper granted Ashton Whitaker, who's 17, a senior at Kenosha Tremper in Kenosha, Wisconsin, permission to use the boys' bathroom. So they gave her permission to go use the boys' bathroom. Kenosha Unified School District appealed the ruling, arguing that the harm to other students, particularly boys, using the bathroom outweighs any harm to Whitaker. Well, the federal court upheld the U.S. District Judge's ruling and basically said, you don't have a right to keep one kid out of the bathroom. And so because of their self-identity. Anyway, I hear a break. So we'll get into the rest of the constitutional matters as soon as we come back from this break. These are our sponsors, so please support them and stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you. Okay, thank you for hanging in there and staying tuned and getting in tune. Back to the Milwaukee issue. The federal court system is basically mandating what morals a given school district, a given county, and a given state is going to have. And to me, this reinforces what I've been asserting, is that the secular judge system and the federal court system and our federal government is enforcing secularism down our throat, whether it's a public school or not. And they're basically, you know, creating this association because they're taxing and they're unconstitutionally supporting the education system. And they're basically, it all started under Obama with this whole transgender thing, that all schools, because they're all covered under the funding and the taxation, where there's no amendment in the Constitution granting them these powers. So if you look at their association, the fact that they're giving us federal dollars, where do those federal dollars come from? They come from us, the taxpayers. And there's a huge bureaucracy in D.C. that has basically dictated Common Core and the morals, and they're pushing their agenda down our throats. And as I've said in several other shows with Mark Erbach when he was on, that the federal court system is enforcing secularism. In other words, they're basically saying, we don't care about your Christianity. That doesn't fly. If it is anything to do with the public, it will be secular, and thou shalt not have any other gods before our secular God. And so the only thing we can do is what I've been saying at the very beginning. But before I move forward, here's an interesting thing. Had a town made a ruling that a Christian church could not build a, you know, big edifice for a Christian organization, and they sued, they probably would have said, well, you know, we'll support the local government and their ruling or their decision in not allowing you to build your edifice. In New Jersey, a town will pay an Islamic group $3.25 million to settle a lawsuit over its denial to permit them to build a mosque. The Department of Justice announced a Tuesday. The devil is always in the details, and this lawsuit went forward last year. Under the settlement, the group will be allowed to build the mosque, and the town agreed to limit the zoning restrictions placed on houses of worship. The Islamic Society of Basking Ridge sued Bernard's Township, an upscale town in central New Jersey, last year, claiming it changed its zoning ordinances in order to deny the group's plans. The Justice Department quickly... So how did this group get the Justice Department's attention to come in just for this lowly mosque? Isn't that interesting? There had to have been an emergency phone, a hotline for, you know, all things Islamic, to just call the White House to basically have the gods of the Department of Justice descend upon anybody that, you know, creates any resistance towards the Islam and the building of Islam in our republic. And so anyway, if you read the details on this, here is another point of fact, that the federal government is now dictating what religion can be allowed or zoned or what have you, that states and counties do not have the power to restrict religion. That kind of lies with that standing question that I have. Do they? Can they? And I'm not going to answer that. But bottom line is the federal government is overreaching in making these types of decisions and asserting into the domain of state, county, and public spaces that are outside the jurisdiction of the federal government. Key word, jurisdiction. The Constitution is very clear on what is their jurisdiction. And if it's not in the Constitution, it is not in their jurisdiction. So anyway, and I understand there's this thing called the Bill of Rights, and that's what we need to discuss. But anyway, if you have any passionate feelings about this, by all means, just call me up and we can talk about what the constitutional rights of religious rights are here in this nation. This is a very important election year, especially for Spokane. And last Friday, I had the pleasure of meeting the conservative candidates. Let me be frank or curt, whichever you prefer. Some of us recognize what is happening to our society and government at all levels. And I believe some of us can identify these different threats that we are facing, such as brainwashing or the inculcation of our children and the education that they're receiving in the education system, the importation of Islam into our republic, as well as in our education system, the out-of-control immigration of crime, indolence, and even disease, and the incessant rising of taxes to pay for these threats to continue to destroy our culture, our society, and our Constitution, and our republic keep on continuing. It's not like taxes have actually gone down. All of these programs come at a cost, and we're paying for them. Isn't that beautiful? They're getting us to pay for people to be lazy, to not do anything, for people to get free handouts at your expense, especially if you're a hard worker listening to this Money Talk Radio, wanting to know what to do with your hard-earned money. Well, you're going to have less of it and less of it because it is on steroids. And it's been on steroids since Johnson. It is only ramped up and ramped up. Even under Reagan, there was no reduction. He cut taxes, but government did, and the government spending did not reduce. And it became a problem later on. This is only a few of the threats that we're facing, but these happen to be the ones that tend to come to the forefront in discussions. If you're confused on how these progressive agendas are continuing to succeed and grow, there are two primary reasons. The first is that conservatives and the conservative base have been split. And if you look at the history of when we got split or when we were divided, this started in 1971. When a group of people from the GOP left the GOP and they formed a new party called the Libertarian Party. And so they became the purists because the GOP had kind of turned its back on the Constitution. And if you look at what Nixon did and a lot of the Republicans, the Libertarians had some grievances, but instead of fixing the problem, they decided to divide themselves and watered down the conservative vote. Well, okay, so that's it. We've got this Libertarian Party. How much is that? Well, it doesn't end there. You now had, in 1990, a Constitution Party split off. And these are the purists of the Constitution, and they supposedly have the moral high ground because they support all things constitutional. Well, except for a few things, but... Putting all that aside, here's another group of people that left and split away, fractionalized the GOP, let's not call it the GOP, let's call it the conservative base, because that's what it is. The libertarians do not support socialism, big government, and the progressive agenda. The Constitutional Party does not support those things. The GOP does not support those things. But as long as we continue to divide and create a Tea Party, which started in, 2008? Actually, the Tea Party, if I remember correctly, because I remember the Tax Enough Already organizations and rallies, actually started around the mid-90s. So again, a new fractionalization started. And the conservative base was then again divided. And so now we have less and less of a focus of conservatives working together. And so that's the first and primary problem of why the conservatives are having such a divide amongst them, is because of these ideological separations in creating these parties. Well, I didn't get to finish this idea or this thought, so I'll get back to what the second in dividing us is. And if you'd stay tuned, I will get to that as soon as we get back. Thank you very much. Okay, so we're back, and I have a second reason why we're divided or ineffective as a base. And that second reason, if you look at the voter turnout, way too many conservatives are not voting. This may be because of a few different factors. One may be that they're just, you know, repulsed by the different candidates, or it may be because, the local races are, you know, not the same year as the presidential, because we have the city council races this year, and it wasn't in line with the presidential and the governor race. So that's usually when most people turn out. Well, you know, it's only local stuff. That is where we have to start. You don't start cleaning the street, and you don't start cleaning your neighborhood until your house is in order. Once your house is in order, then you can clean your street and, you know, your few neighbors. Then you start working on the neighborhood, your community. And once your community's all cleaned up, then you work on your town, then your county, and then your state. You have to get your priorities straight. So you have to start local. You have to start at the lowest level. And we can't allow low level, not that they're, you know, low level beings, but low level government, we can't allow them to just run amok in creating and injecting progressive agendas and socialism. What we have to do is we have to reel them in and get them to focus on the objects of government that Madison clearly stated. That's why I'm trying to educate and provide the references to who said this, you know, who said that they're supposed to be protecting property and life. That was Madison. That was Jefferson. And so if they're not doing that, and they're basically trying to reach deeper and deeper into your pocket, whether it be a soda tax, whether it be some property tax raises or bonds, because they decided not to fund schools, because they decided not to fund police, because they decided not to fund the fire department, so that they could use that money for homeless or for a refugee camp or some other pet peeve socialistic progressive agenda policy or program, then what's happening is they're making you pay more and more. Because, you know, when it comes to a bond, it's, you know, who's against the police? Who's against the kids? You got to support that bond. At least you're more likely to support that, and relieving them of having to do their job and allowing them to bring in more and more indolence, or I should say loyalty of voters. It used to be illegal for a candidate to basically show up on election day, take you over to the bar, buy you drinks, and then take you over to the polling place so you'd vote for them. What's the difference in a candidate that says, if you vote for me, I'm going to give you health care, when the laws of the land say I can't use my position or power to hand or to dip into the public treasury and give these things to you? The law of the land says I'm limited to doing these things, and unless you allow me to do these things, I can't. But if you vote for me, I'm going to ignore the law of the land, and I'm going to give you these things. And that's what's been happening since 1849. So understanding where we have to fight is critical, and where we have to fight is local first. We've got to get these local representatives aligned with what they're supposed to be doing in protecting us from federal tyranny. And so I'm working on petitions. I'll be having petitions posted soon of elected officials to sign, basically recognizing and supporting that they recognize the federal tyranny and all the unconstitutional government. And if you read my executive summary, you'll understand what needs to be done. I'm not going to read it here, at least not now. I don't have time. But I will be posting this, so I'll let you know when these petitions are out, so that this way we can get the local leadership and local elected officials to signing these petitions. That way, these petitions can start flooding the state legislatures in letting them know that we want them to do their job. They don't know what their job is. As a matter of fact, when I started this radio show, most people listening, and as I said, you know, this is the 10,000th club, because it's a 0.1 or 0.0001 percentage of the population understands the Constitution and how far out aligned or how far unaligned the federal government is. They're that far out of scope. 80% of our federal government is unconstitutional. And there's no arguing this. If it's not in the Constitution, they can't do it, and they're doing it. And they're violating it. They're blatantly violating it. It started again, like I said earlier, in 1849. So this is a very critical election year. And I'm hoping that as I make these announcements and reaching out and connecting with these candidates, that you can get involved and, you know, support your district, support the entire city, and making sure we buoy these guys up, because they're just three guys. And so if there was a female, I'd say buoy these people up. But anyway, there was going to be a female candidate, but I don't know why she dropped out. Anyway, long story short, if we buoy them up and we support them and we actually start doing, using our resources to helping them. If you don't have a lot of money, then take a Sunday and walk through your neighborhood with, you know, sample ballots and so forth and say, hey, I really support this person, especially with the like-minded people you know, getting them to commit to voting. If we turn around the voter turnout and get all conservative voters to vote, this would be a landslide election. The other thing I ask is that if you really are committed, start applying the power of prayer and start praying on a regular basis that we can take back this city, this county, and this state. Because I believe in the power of prayer, and I think that that's the best place to start, as well as taking action as soon as you get up off your knees and knocking on doors or reaching into your wallet. We've got to help. And we've got to take ownership as the individual electorate, because if we're not, then we're no longer a self-governed people. We are basically allowing ourselves to be subjugated to the few elitists that are in office, and we can't allow that. We can't allow them to keep pissing in our gene pool and watering us down and making us a socialist country. Anyway, what I'm not going to talk about, what I don't talk about on this show, so I do get these people asking me, and I was actually asked today, are you going to talk about Griffin? No, I don't talk about the distractions. What I try to talk about are the citing, the founding documents, talking in a constitutional perspective, in context to anybody doing things, whether they're burning somebody in effigy or decapitation. I believe in the freedom of speech, and I do believe that there are limitations to the freedom of speech. You cannot walk into a theater and yell fire. You cannot jeopardize public safety. So I think that we have laws on the books that limit speech, but sometimes people go a little bit overboard when it comes to political speech. But then again, we're supposed to allow that. But it's not happening on the conservative side. The progressive side, their narrative is moving forward. If we're going to be serious about taking back this city, county, and state, we have to ignore the crowd noise and all of these distractions and focus on our direct opponents. Those opponents are in the city council. They're the county commissioners and the state legislative body and our governor. We need to get true constitutionalists, people that understand that when they're raising their right arm to the square and taking their oath, that they will be held accountable in protecting and defending us from federal tyranny, because they take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. So, as a reminder, I still have the standing question concerning whether or not the U.S. Constitution guarantees the right of freedom. So I'm poking you again. If you want to call in, and you know, you may be calling in and we're just completely missing it. So if you call in and we're not hearing the phone, because, you know, we do have callers that we usually reach out, or they do call in, but we're prepared for that. So just fire me either an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, or you can hit me up on Facebook and say, hey, you know, I've called in and nobody is answering. So let us know. If you have an opinion on religious freedom, please, by all means, call in. Now, before I get into the Federalist Papers, because I got about 15 minutes left or less than that, I always say, are the words of these founding documents and the framers that they've written down and committed to ink onto paper, are these words, which were clearly documented, the words of deceit? Were these men lying and fabricating with nefarious intent and having machinations in undermining your liberty? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive education system, the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers and politicians, are their words the words of deceit in contradicting what the framers had said? I'll let you think about that, and we'll get into the Federalist Papers as soon as we come back from this break. So please stay tuned, and we're getting into the Federalist Papers now. Thank you. So when I started writing my first book and getting back into Who Do We Trust, as I read these words and I started reading the details of what was written by the framers, I could kind of see how Hamilton kind of walked the fence or kind of straddled that line of maybe using a good academic argument for supporting the Constitution. But you could also kind of see how he created, like I say, straw men or red herrings or, you know, these facades of assertions. And then later on, like with the Assumption Act and post the constitutional ratification, Hamilton was very quick to start trying to grow and justify the growth of federal powers, creating a national bank and so forth. But out of all the framers, he was really the only one that was truly a nationalist. But he did have his limitations. He didn't think that the federal government should get into the knickers or into the details of the state. That was never the intent. And as we read through the Federalist Papers, that is a consistent message, and it has to be an overwhelming message. So that's why going through the Federalist Papers, I think, is critical. Once we're finished with these few last Federalist Papers that I have over the next few shows, we're going to get into the ratification debates. What did Hamilton say in New York? What did Madison say in Virginia? Why were these guys there? Because they were the delegates that actually wrote the Constitution. So why are their words really important and what they said at the ratification debates? Well, again, the Constitution is a contract. It was written for and by the states. And so this contract, as you negotiate, because the ratification debates was the negotiation process. And so in this negotiation process, these guys that wrote it were explaining, clarifying, and defining what these lines meant in the Constitution. Some states went line by line. Virginia said that they were going to go line by line through the Constitution. They really didn't. They actually did read parts of it, but they really didn't discuss it because they had such powerful personalities like Patrick Henry, James Monroe, John Marshall. John Marshall was in that process as well, that Supreme Court justice that slid federalism or nationalism way down the slope and taking and stealing states' liberties and sovereignties as well as the people's liberty and sovereignties. Anyway, the whole point is that there's a consistent message in all of these, and in the ratification debates, these guys clearly testified what the federal government could do and could not do. And that's why I say you can't read the Constitution and argue with anybody today that says, well, the supremacy clause means that anything the federal government says, because these assertions have been done by Marshall. These assertions of these clauses within the Constitution have skewed everything. And unless you read the ratification debates, unless you read the Federalist Papers, you don't recognize that that supremacy clause only applies to those enumerated, the listed powers within the Constitution, and that's it. They were never portals to be able to assume a new power like creating the Department of Interior, the Department of Homeland Security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, the last time I covered the Federalist Papers, I covered Federalist Paper number 10, James Madison, regarding the rights of property, and that that is the first object of government, is protecting your rights of property, not just your property, but your right to obtain property, your right to grow your wealth and so forth. Government is not supposed to restrict you from those things unless there's a public safety issue, unless your rights are going to take away somebody else's rights because you're going to kill people by polluting something to that effect. But that's still a local government. Again, in the grand scheme of politics, as Madison was saying, the rights of property is the first object of government, all different governments. The federal government and its jurisdiction only, you know, has the rights of, you know, protecting our national security, foreign affairs, and those few listed powers such as taxation, the direct taxation, and or the, you know, the property of federal government and so forth. We'll get into all of that. The next Federalist Paper that I read last week was Hamilton in Federalist Paper number 1, paragraph 5, where he basically asserted that the species mask, or this suspicious mask of zeal for the rights of people, then under the forbidden appearance of the zeal of the firmness of efficiency. So Hamilton is a very literate person. What he was trying to say is that the zeal for people's rights will always be the suspect of tyranny over the efficiency of government. And so that is true, because it is the parties and the factions and the zeal of people in trying to get equality, social justice, and those types of things to try to move the scales into their favor. And when they do that, they trample on the majority or the minority. Because really, if you look at what's been happening in America, it's been a minority of these zealots that have been getting into positions and through the education system that has been pushing this nation down this wrong road. And now we've got this whole class of, as Lenin would call them, useful idiots that completely believe everything they've learned in school. And most of that stuff has been lies. Anyway, what Hamilton was saying was the fact that this alludes to the dangers of democracy. And what they had to do, the progressives had to do, is they had to convert our understanding of our government from a hybrid constitutional republic to a democracy. So if you ask anybody that's coming out of school, what type of government do we have? They'll tell you, oh, we've got a democracy. Well, if you believe we've got a democracy, then everybody's, you know, it's 50% plus one. It is the mob rule or the voice of the people. And in a democracy, that is where tyranny begins. And if you read Aristotle's Politics, if you read Hayek's The Road to Serfdom, they both get into how demagoguery starts by a candidate, you know, vilifying the system, vilifying a candidate or what have you. And this demagoguery rises to a point where when they get in, they use this populist base. Populism is a form of democracy as well. And this populism pushes this wave of change. But the beautiful thing is that the Constitution cannot be changed by populism or democracy. The only way the Constitution can change is through the ratification or the amendment and ratification process in Article 5. Anyway, the first Federalist Paper I want to cover today is, again, Federalist Paper number 10, where Madison is talking about the limitation of representatives. So in the very beginning, they said a representative needed to represent 30,000 citizens. And so if you read the Constitution, it clearly states that a representative is supposed to represent 30,000 citizens. And this is what Hamilton says. In the first place, it is to be remarked that however small the republic may be, the representatives must be raised to a certain number in order to guard against the cabals of a few, and that however large it may be, they must be limited to a certain number in order to guard against the confusion of a multitude. Hence, the number of the representatives in the two cases not being in proportion to that of the two constituents. So the key thing I want to point out is he talks about two constituents here in Federalist Paper 10. Who are the two constituents? The first is the people for the House of Representatives. The second is the state for the Senate. The Senate is supposed to represent the constituents of the state. The state and their focus is to be driven by the citizens of those states. And each state and their focus is disparate and unique from other states. A coastal state is different from an interior state. Anyway, I will wrap up. This is the end of the show, and I will get back into this Federalist Paper as soon as we get back next week. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week. God bless.